Well, basically, what I did and what I would advise to other junior developers is like to search for a chance, search for a job that will give you opportunity to learn many stuff. Because I think in the beginning of the career, it is really important to have the opportunity to learn many things and to work with different types of people. So that would be the most important one. Don't look how big is the paycheck or something like that, but look how much you can learn. And if you feel that you're stuck for some time, that you don't advance, that you don't learn, then switch a job and find something that is interesting to you and where you can grow. Because when you stop growing, that is not usually a good sign.
Welcome to Extend Women in Tech Podcast. We are a tech community podcast that highlights stories of women in tech and inspire everyone into tech. This is Jonah Anderson, and here with me is Shetty Tarafi, my co-host on this podcast. Today, we have a special guest on our podcast, Maria Gensch, based in Stockholm, Sweden, who is now working as a senior software engineer in H&M Group. She has worked in different organizations as software engineer and tech lead. She has earned her bachelor's and master's degrees in computer science from the University of Belgrade. And I would like to welcome her to Extend Women in Tech podcast. Welcome, Maria. We are glad to have you here.
Welcome, Maria.
Welcome.
Thank you, Jonna. Thank you, Shadi.
Maria, I'm glad that you have joined us today. Me and Maria know each other through her husband. I work with her wonderful husband at the same company. That's how I start to know her. I'm going to ask her some questions about herself and what inspired her to become a software engineer. As we introduced her, she works as H&M Group now. And then how it got started in this field. Can you tell us a bit more?
Yes, first of all, thank you for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here and to talk with you today. So basically how I started to or wanted to be a software engineer, I mean, it basically started in the middle school. I always like playing with computers and dismantling computers and like seeing out how things work. And I also ran out from school to play video games. So that was basically how it started. I went to faculty. I finished a bachelor's and master's degree and then went off with my career. So yeah, and I finished up here in Stockholm somehow. But yeah, as I said, I'm pretty recent here. I've been living here for 8 months for now.
Yes, that's nice to hear. How are you finding the culture, the weather for, you said past 8 months?
Yeah.
Are you liking Sweden so far?
Oh yeah, really much.
Great.
I've been through my first winter, so that went well.
Yeah.
So I'm really optimistic for now.
Yeah, we have great summers also in Sweden. So definitely something you will look forward to.
Yes, I've already been the past summer and it was really, really wonderful.
Yes.
But as I said, I think the winter is not that bad. People overreact.
Yeah, I know. There are other places that has more colder weather than we do.
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Can you tell us about your current job at H&M Group? You can explain what H&M Group does and in general, not detail, how your day starts and ends.
Yeah, I basically transferred here to take on this job. I'm currently working as a senior software engineer in the machine learning platform department. So basically, my team is the platform team. It gives support to the various machine learning teams, that outputs some of the use case, for example, recommending you items to buy on the website. That is, for example, one. So our job is basically to support them and to pull out some generics, because there are so many of these machine learning teams. We basically need to find patterns and to pull out some generic components that are reusable, and basically build a platform which the whole company can use to train models, to create pipelines for different calculations and predictions, and for serving basically those predictions. We are basically developer-centered, meaning that we develop microservices, libraries, and that kind of stuff that machine learning engineers don't need to put the effort in. So yeah, basically we work mostly in Python. That's our to-go language, and also my favorite language and main language throughout career. So yes, I would say we are now dealing a lot with the cloud and multi-cloud environments, and building that ML platform on the multi-cloud.
I have a follow-up question in that. I myself also is a software engineer, as an IT, senior IT consultant, and I work a lot with development, specifically in .NET full stack, as well as cloud development with DevOps. So I'm curious, you did mention hybrid and multi-cloud, and you did mention microservices. So I'm curious what, because I myself is a consumer or a member of H&M Group, I'm like a user. I buy some clothes there because you do have the mobile app and everything. And then it's great to know that you're using AI and, I mean, machine learning to improve the system. So I'm curious, in the technical perspective, what kind of cloud H&M Group is using for the software applications you have?
Yes, up until now, and I think most of the infrastructure is based on Azure, but our team, the AI department is transitioning to GCP. So we are now heavily dealing with GCP and trying to transfer everything there basically. But because that transition like is in progress for some teams, we now have a situation where like a part of the infrastructure is on Azure and one part is being built on the GCP. So we also need to make sure that that is well connected.
Yes. So yeah. You're doing the multi-cloud strategy in terms, so you prevent that cloud vendor locked in, that you have the solution in this part in Azure, and then some solution that works best with GCP as well. And then yeah, that's great to know. Thank you for sharing about that.
Yeah, in Middleton we are now trying to make that work, multi-cloud environment, but the plan for these use case teams is to transition to GCP. Mm-hmm. Because we are now basing our ML platform on Google's Vertex AI.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
I worked a lot with automations and like software automations, developing automated workflows for various executions and processing of the data.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I do have probably related questions to that in terms of automation. So you did mention you work with automations. What kind of automations are you working? Is it the automation of the infrastructure or automation of orchestration or workflows through containers, or more
workflows? Like, in the beginning of my career, I worked in a biotech company called Seven Bridges. Like, they had a platform for processing biodata. And basically, all major pharmaceutical companies were using it. I worked on a really interesting project there. Like, we had a company that is developing a cure for cancer, like personalized vaccines for cancer. So we needed basically to automate their scripts. There were a lot of people who are bioinformaticians, and they basically created these scripts that do a specific part of job, and those needed to be tied into some workflow and executed like on a schedule level or depending on the use case, but big amount of automations there.
Yes.
We needed to implement, and also the big part of the infrastructure was in cloud.
Okay, yes.
We used AWS and GCP also.
Yes, that's right. I do work with, speaking of automation or workflows, I speak a lot, I share a lot about workflows or serverless workflows in Azure cloud. And in Azure Functions, for example, there's this extension called Durable Functions. So I share mostly about how you can use that extension of serverless in Azure to execute stateful workflows with all these events that are happening and when to execute it when something happens. So similar to that, and definitely other cloud providers like AWS and GCP, serverless communities have different variations of it depending on each use case. As you know, each use case is different, and each use case has its specific solution that works as well.
I think this was like a while ago. I think even before they started the cloud functions. So yeah, yes. We basically had to develop specialized microservices and also specialized libraries that helped bioinformaticians to basically connect and create those workflows.
Yes.
Were executed like a topological graph, for example.
That's great. Speaking of microservices, I know that we working in software engineering and especially with the cloud, microservices and event-driven architecture is very popular and trending these days because of the reason that nobody wants to have this undistributed system, the monolithic system. And if we have the microservices or distributed system, it's easier to isolate where the problem is. Do you have any thoughts based on your experience in terms of microservices in your previous project or current project to share with our listeners?
Yes, I mean, most of my career, I've been working on developing and maintaining microservices. At the beginning, we were also breaking out some monoliths that were there and transitioned to microservice architecture. But yes, for me, I would say I have the most experience in that field.
Yes. How was the breaking of the monoliths to microservices? Was it an easy journey, or it's a rough or challenging yet learning journey as well?
Depends. I mean, sometimes it can be challenging. You need to evaluate which parts to pull off from that monolith, and you need to figure out how to test it and how to basically live off through that transitional period and being in production at the same time.
I understand. How about Shetty? You worked as a front-end developer, Shetty. Have you worked with a micro? I know there's a new in the front-end arena in development. I know there's a new practice as well called micro front-ends, where you do micro services of the front-end part. Have you heard of it?
No.
I understand. Because I know it's mostly microservices, mostly on the back end part, and then integrating between distributed system. But I've heard in the front end development that there is also what they call micro front end. But I myself haven't tried it. But some says there is a benefit of it in the front end part. But
yeah,
maybe something we're checking.
Right. Yes. Thank you for that. But I want to ask Maria, how do you keep up with this, all these new upcoming new techs? And then do you have any favorite platform that you regularly check?
I mean, for this regular like news, I read a couple of channels, Reddit, then YouTube, I think is my main. I usually try to, I mean, because throughout my career, I've been mostly dealing with, we always strived to implement new technologies. So I basically always needed to keep up with the new technologies, see what's new, and see how to implement that in the current infrastructure. So even today, I spent most of my days reading documentation. Now it is like for the Google Cloud, but for any other technology that I want to learn more about, read documentation, I watch YouTube videos because I need to like fill that documentation with some visual elements.
Do you have any favorite YouTuber, like any channel, YouTube channel that you recommend to our listeners?
Not a general one, but for now I'm hanging on to GCP Cloud's channel. But I also sometimes read the Medium because they have like really nice articles and sometimes really useful tutorials if you want to do some complex stuff. Because for me, the problem is if you want to do something that is above basic, that is more complex, then reading documentation and watching YouTube is not enough. So
I do agree with that. Yes. Usually, like for example, programming can be complex depending on what you're trying to build or solve or debug. And sometimes just reading the theory or the text is not enough. And it usually it helps to do the side-by-side hands-on where you really try to understand what it is doing and how it can be solved or how it can be built, for example. So I can relate to that.
I mean, everything that's not a basic example can become a really search for a needle in a haystack.
So I did also study computer science a long time ago. And my first programming language was Visual Basic. And after I graduated, I didn't get a chance to work in software development. And then when I moved to Sweden, I started learning .NET and started coding, worked as a consultant. And I personally think that what I learned in computer science in the university back then was a good fundamentals, but I actually learned by doing what you did, Maria, like really trying to get a topic that you want to develop and be better at yourself, understand it through free videos like YouTube, and then try to do hands-on and apply it in your current job. So my point is really learning by doing with a real project is what makes us a better software engineers and developers. And what's your thought about it? What's your thought about it, Maria or Shetty, about that statement?
Yes, I mean, I completely agree. You actually need to have a hands-on and do a real project in order to learn something in deep. Because if you only go like vanilla way, the basic way, you will not learn much because you won't be faced with many problems. If you just run Hello World project.
Yeah, it's just the basic things. So it's just like printing out something, but in the real world, you're really solving problems beyond showing Hello World in different languages.
But I would say you are now as a senior software engineer. How was the transition from a mid-level or maybe from junior to this senior level? And then what do you have for our junior developers, what kind of advice would you give?
Well, basically, what I did and what I would advise to other junior developers is like to search for a chance, search for a job that will give you opportunity to learn many stuff. Because I think in the beginning of the career, it is really important to have the opportunity to learn many things and to work with different types of people. So that would be the most important one. Don't look how big is the paycheck or something like that, but look how much you can learn. And if you feel that you're stuck for some time, that you don't advance, that you don't learn, then switch a job and find something that is interesting to you and where you can grow. Because when you stop growing, that is not usually a good sign.
That is a good statement.
Yes, I really like that. I can relate. I was like about reactive, but I was muted. It was a great, great statement, and I can really relate. It's like if I were to summarize your advice, it's almost the same as my own motto in my engineering career, that you need to find the job or career or role that you love and you're passionate about. You don't have to stay in the same role that you're not happy with, where you're not developing and learning. So I do agree with you in terms of that. And also the part where you grow, not just technical wise, but also the non-technical aspects of what we do as software engineer. In any company, you learn to communicate, collaborate, solve problems. And the more problems you solve, the more challenges you conquered, the more you also learned, right? When you face them again. So that's really great. Thank you for sharing that with us and also to our audience, Maria.
Yeah. I would just add, it's also important, like with which types of people are you surrounded? Yeah, it is always good if you're surrounded by other senior engineers that have good engineering practices. If you learn that from start, then I think it would be easier for you to advance in the career, because like beginning of the career, you need to build the knowledge there. You need to have a good baseline.
I was about to ask both of you, like one statement that Maria said at the beginning was like, find a job which it's the main focus shouldn't be the paycheck, but the opportunity makes you grow. Is it easy to find such a place? Like, what do you look into when you are trying to find a job that will give you an opportunity more to grow? My second question related to this would be, if there are more seniors, would they give opportunities to the junior ones? Because, if it's like a challenging job or a challenging task, it will be given to the seniors, not the juniors. So will there be a place to grow at this point?
Yes. I think that depends on the company, but for me, I think I was lucky. I know it is hard when you're just starting and you're a junior engineer to figure out where is a potential good place. But in my example, there were many seniors in the company, but you also had a good development plan for every junior that comes in. So you were given tasks according to your level, and the tasks were organized in that way so you advance really fast. So in the beginning, you are given the smaller tasks, something easier. You would be code-reviewed, coached, mentored until you reach a certain level. And then when you are a mid-year, you can start acquiring more responsibility. And basically, they give you more and more challenging projects to work on. I mean, I went from a junior to a senior in one company. I mean, it was a couple of years that I worked there, but it was a really precious knowledge that I earned.
Yes, that's a great answer, Maria. I also wanna, I do agree with Maria that it actually depends on the company, like finding the right company that will allow you to excel and grow in the technologies or roles that you really want. It really depends on the company and the culture. And if you're a beginner that's still looking for that place, you really need to do your like homework or investigation, and not just think about what we discussed also when Maria said that just the paycheck. If that company offers you this salary on the table, and then you know that that company is not taking values in the work culture and the welfare of their employees, or even having this inclusive place where everyone can excel and grow, then that might be something that you can lay low first and look if there's something better that works for you. And then it usually helps if you contact someone that's like, there's a company that you're interested in, you contact someone that already works there and try to get advice what is really in the culture there. Because admit it or not, most companies that are recruiting for tech roles and even software developer, they always say, we're best at this, we're best at this, but we don't really know what's the inside thing until you get to know that background info. So that's, investigation is very important. And then also just sometimes you just have to listen to your gut, and you think that that's the right one and it feels right for you, then give your yourself a chance to do it. Learn from that. If you don't feel like you're growing, just like what Maria said, like find another job. You maybe learned something here, a few months experience or a year. Find another job if you don't feel happy with that role that you're working on. So I'm a gardener, so it's just like when you're planting a seed and the soil is bad, then you need to find a better place or soil for that seed for it to grow. That's my gardener insights.
Yes. Yeah, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, that's great. What do you think, Shetty?
Yeah, true.
Did we answer your questions too?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a good conversation. I like it. I think so many people can relate to this stuff. Yeah, they can take the advice you guys give.
I mean, I would also say don't stay too long in one company. I mean, I know, I mean, this is probably controversial a bit, but I feel that some people that stay in a company for 10 plus years, I don't think you can develop as much. I mean, you just get stuck in some mundane life and don't advance too much. But yeah, that might not be the case.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that, especially if it's like 10 years and you're doing the same thing, that doesn't feel like you're growing. It's like you're stagnant in what you do. But there are actually companies also, I have my experience myself, that I've been in this project or company consulting client for almost 3 years now, and I did have this opportunity to switch in different projects as well. So I do different things because it's a big company, they have lots of applications. So you can also choose, if you have that opportunity, to switch and ask, is there any other projects that's better than what I do right now? So you can ask. But if you don't have that opportunity in the same company, I do agree with Maria, find something, a place where you can excel and grow and do whatever you love doing as well. So you have to let yourself grow as well as a software engineer and take the challenge of learning new things. I know that change is not often accepted, but mainly because, you know, change in everything, change of job, change of employer, change of moving from one place to another is also a challenge itself, but that's how we grow sometimes.
Yeah, I also feel that you can sometimes get stuck in the ways of working of one company and the culture. So if you stay too long, you're not probably going to be so flexible when you transition to some other company or a job.
Yeah.
So you need to learn that, to be flexible and to accept that different companies, different peoples have different ways of working, and like there is no just one correct way.
Yeah, I like this advice or talks that we're doing, because there might be some junior developers that are not, that don't dare to quit their job, even if they are not happy, because they think that's the only option they have. It's really good that we're talking transparently about this to inspire our listeners.
I think now it's a good time. They should be able to find a job fairly easy.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's always the toughest when you need to quit your first job.
Yes, that's right. Now, we have a few, some questions. I have some questions left for you, Maria. So I know that in one of your previous role, you worked as a lead software engineer. So I'm curious, what is your advice to those senior engineers, software engineers that are thinking about transitioning their roles to be a leader in their organization or a new organization? What's your advice for them on that? How does the roadmap or path look like?
Yes, as I said, I was like a technical tech lead in a small team dedicated to crawling. So yeah, that was like a big leap in my career. I really became independent and had the freedom to decide a lot of big stuff related to infrastructure and so on. But my advice to the people is, if you want to be of that kind of like a leading position, you need to have like strong initiative. I think that's that's important. Your voice needs to be heard, basically. And what else is important? You need to be even tempered, so to say. So like a moderate character, not too impulsive, I think you need to have a calmer character. I think people underestimate that. But I think that's maybe the biggest portion of that, the character of the person, and sometimes not the knowledge.
I agree on that. I need to be like being a leader is not an easy 1, 2, 3 steps. Sometimes it's built in. I mean, you're really naturally a leader, especially if you're naturally charismatic, but it can be learned. But I do agree, being a technical lead or leader of a group of software engineers is not just about you. Hey, I have this years of experience software development, I'm better than you, my team. No, it's more like really connecting with each of your team members and relate to them as if you're the mentor, the guide that they can follow in terms of making decisions. And of course, each individual in the team, they are unique like us as well. So we really need to get into the personal level in a way that we understand them. And if they say something or done something that frustrates us as leaders, then we need, as you said, Maria, you really need to be like, find a balance that you don't go like get angry or get upset or something, because you need to be professional, keep it professional. And then so at the same time, think about moving forward as a team together as well, and try to solve the problem, whatever issue
it is. Yeah, I think you said it right. You first need to be a mentor and connect to the people.
Yes.
Because sometimes you can be the best technical person, you might have the best knowledge, but if you don't know how to express that and connect to the people, then it's not much worth it.
Yes, you will be like the typical programmer that you see in movies, like in the hoodie, and then headset, eyeglasses, and just looking like that, and then really just connecting with the computer and the code, but not connecting to the people around. So both are good, technical and the connection to others as well.
Yeah, you need the character.
Yes, right? That's right.
Do you think that are female developers underrepresented in the tech industry?
Mm-hmm. That was actually surprising to me because in Serbia, there are many female students in the tech university, and also like in the companies, there are many female developers. So I would say definitely at least 30, 40 to 50% somewhere. So that was like a normal thing to me. When I first transitioned to working like for a Swiss company where I was a tech lead, then I was shocked because like I was the only female software developer. There was also one girl, also junior, but she was also from Serbia. And like, in Switzerland, there are basically no female developers for some reason. I mean, in Sweden here, I would say it's maybe a better situation, but still, I think females are underrepresented in this field. I don't know what could be the cause, but.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Some countries are still having the challenges. In Sweden, it's pretty okay. We're you see some developers or like a women in tech around Sweden, but in certain, like for example, I did study software development or programming farther when I moved to Sweden, .NET and Java development, and in my class we were like one or two or three students, and some of them actually, a few of them didn't make it or just decided, oh, this is not for me. And they just did not feel inspired. But I think what we've been doing right now, I mean, based on my observation, it's improving, especially now that software engineers or women in tech are starting to like do podcast guesting like we're doing right now, and really setting good examples is also a good start. But I think that in order to solve it, the first step is to inspire technology in schools, because I used to teach programming to kids years ago, and there I saw the gap already. So showing to everyone through IT as well that there are females can be programmers, or it doesn't matter what gender you are, you can work whatever you want in the industry of tech. That should be a good start of inspiration.
I mean, the first programmer was a female.
Yeah.
Ada Byron.
Lady Ada Lovelace. Yeah, that's right. She helped build the machine. Yes.
Yeah, I was actually inspired by her, and I named one of my first services like her. So yeah,
that's great. Is it Ada?
Yeah.
Yes, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Yes.
We had that fun practice. Like everyone who develops a new service or a library gets to name them, and they were usually like pretty funny names.
Yeah, that's great. Yes,
that you mentioned about maybe I can make a follow-up question here. Serbia has like in general, like it's not an issue with female developers as a nation. Can you say Serbia is doing this, that's why female developers are in high demand or maybe in a high supply? Can you spot any, in national level, this is happening? Is it because of different initiatives that in schools, or is there any special thing that is being done by the government maybe?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, back home, like you're not limited, like what you get to choose whatever faculty you want to apply for. And like, I know I finished math faculty, the computer department on math faculty, and majority of that faculty are women. I mean, computer science department has like a bigger amount of men, but the other departments are all almost female. I don't know, I feel like female students are usually more hardworking and geeky and that kind of stuff. And usually all the math teachers are women, at my home at least. I don't know, I mean, what maybe, I would say inspired people to get more into this faculty is like, if you are in IT in Serbia, you probably have a really, really good salary that's high above average. So you can actually live a really good life. So I think that's also a big incentive to why people are struggling to get into technical faculties.
Yes, I understand. Yes, it's interesting to hear about how it is there as well. So I do hope that when your friends and family in your home country, Serbia, listens to this, they will be like spreading it out and inspire the girls and the women in tech to follow your path, which is very inspirational.
I hope so. Thanks.
Do you have any advice on the importance of collaboration and communication in software engineering and how you work with other team members? Like, can you highlight and what benefits the team and what kind the company?
Yes, I think when you are working in this field, like people relations are really, really important. You should strive to connect to your colleagues and have a good relationship and not to like stress out on a minor problems. I mean, we all have different opinions on some stuff, like how this should be implemented, how this should be designed. But I think these are all minor issues that you can face with your colleagues. So you shouldn't be stressed out around that. And you should take it easy, be relaxed.
Thank you.
That's great. Yeah. So, yeah, I think like we discussed a lot of things in this episode. So we learned a lot about you, Maria. We learned about what you do at H&M Group. We learned about your tech journey and your perspective in different aspects of software engineering, machine learning, and even your advice to those that are leading to be leaders in the software engineering field. So do you have any further advice to our listeners that are still finding their path in tech? Do you have any top Yes. advice for them?
For me, what was the most beneficial and what I think it's really important is for people to get out of their comfort zone. If you're constantly in that comfort zone, you're not gonna advance much and you're not gonna make new knowledge and like expand your, knowledge, but also a character. So I would say push yourself and try to get out of that comfort zone, try to get on more challenging tasks, and also be nice to your colleagues.
Oh, okay. I think all of us are nice to our colleagues, right? Just kidding. Yes, thank you so much, Maria, for that great advice. I love it. I myself live by it. And I also want to add that my advice is to be brave. When you do these things and getting out of your comfort zone, it requires courage and being brave to dare to do things that you've never done before. So keep enjoying what you want to do, and in the journey, enjoy it. It might be tough and rough sometimes, but just enjoy the journey, the ride of your of your trip. Yeah, but Maria, how can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they need your inspirational advice or content? How can they reach out to you?
I mean, they can always find me on LinkedIn. I have a page there. I also have a GitHub account. So yes, those are the channels that you can reach me on.
Thank you, Maria, for taking your lovely Saturday spending with us and then giving advice like Juna said to our listeners. And it was a really good conversation we had. I really want to thank you both for today's episode. Yeah, that's all I have for today.
Yes. Yeah, thank you so much, Maria and Charity, also for spending time like discussing this important topics that matters, and really an honor and pleasure to finally meet you, Maria, and hopefully we can meet in person in Stockholm someday. We can do
Fika
someday, so hopefully we can arrange that in the coming months. And of course, thank you to our audience that are listening to us right now. And if you found this session or episode inspiring, especially the story of Maria, feel free to share it on LinkedIn or to your friends. And yeah, and we can listen to us on Spotify. We are in Google Podcasts and in all channels like Apple Podcasts, everywhere. We also have Twitter and LinkedIn. And feel free to reach out to me and Shetty if you have a story to share with us and want to inspire others as well. All right. So thank you so much for listening and spending time with us today in this episode. Bye-bye.